We have started the recording at the commission's offices.
Okay, the time now is 2:02 PM. It's October 27th, 2021. Turn over to you, Chairman Egan.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Owen Egan, and I am the Chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the regular meeting of the commission, October 27th, 2021. Before we begin, I'll take a roll call in alphabetical order so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Mr. Barry? Mr. Chavez? Mr. Einhorn? Mr. Fuzeci? Mr. Hankins?
Here.
Mr. Shaw?
Here.
Mr. Streeter?
Here.
Mr. Winkler, and myself, Chairman Owen Egan, I'm here.
Mr. Chairman, it's Matt Reed here. I just noticed Commissioner Fuzeci just signed in.
I'm here. Thank you.
Fuzeci, you're here?
Yes, I am here.
Thank you. All right. This meeting is open to the public and is being conducted solely through the use of electronic equipment due to the COVID-19 pandemic. It will be recorded in its entirety. For everyone participating in today's meeting, please remember to identify yourself first for the recording each time you are called upon to speak. All participants are expected to conduct themselves in a respectful manner at all times and not interrupt the commission deliberations. If the commission believes any person's conduct is disruptive, that person will be placed on mute at the direction of the chairman. Further disruption may lead to that person's removal from the telephonic meeting. When the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll call. I will conduct the roll. This item is consideration of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of October 13th, 2021. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I move adoption of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of October 13th, 2021.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Commissioner Hankins, is seconding it?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye when I call your name in the roll. Commissioner Chavez?
I will abstain because I wasn't present. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yeah.
Mr. Shaw?
Yes.
Streeter?
Yes.
And then myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously with one abstention, Mr. Chavez. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. The hearing officer's reports are publicly accessible on our website, which is at www.ct.gov/FOI, through links on the agenda for today's meeting. I will call the docket. If you are a party and wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. Calling first docket number FIC 2020-0026, Victor Velasco versus Roland Cook, Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Are you there, Mr. Velasco?
Mr. Chairman, it's Colleen Murphy here. It is our understanding that Mr. Velasco was transferred to another institution, I think as late as last night, and we've been trying to locate him. The number that we had for him was nobody was picking up, or we had a problem with it. So we're trying to locate him now. If you could maybe pass on that. And he also has two other matters on the agenda, so I'm hopeful that we will locate him.
Okay, thank you. We'll pass that one for now. Calling docket number FIC 2020-0124, Jason Good versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Are you there, Mr. Good? Mr. Good, are you there? Is there anyone there from the State of Connecticut?
Yes, this is Attorney Jennifer LaFleur for the respondent.
You wish to be heard?
No, I would urge adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Thank you. I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. If I may, I'd like to move adoption of the hearing officer's report at the request of the respondent.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Okay. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chairman, it's Colleen Murphy again. And Mr. Good, I thought that Attorney Reed was going to attempt to reach him. Perhaps he could weigh in on that if Attorney Reed is able.
The only number I got was for Mr. Velasco, and my understanding is others would be dialing in. This could be him coming in now.
He's correct.
Yes, this is Councilor Leder. I'm going to patch in. It may good. Hold on.
Okay. Thank you. Perfect timing. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Hold on. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, for the purposes, I'll withdraw my motion. Commissioner Streeter.
Commissioner Hankins, I'll withdraw the second.
Okay. Jason Good, are you there? Hello? Jason Good, I just called your case. I am Owen Egan. I'm here at the Freedom of Information Commission. I'm calling your case, Jason yeah. Good versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut Department of Correction. Would you like me to mark that ready?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what this is about. Is this from 2020?
Yes. Would you like to be heard, or do you wish us to act on it?
You can just act on it and just give me a disposition. I can take it off record and stuff.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion then.
Okay.
Hold on a second, Mr.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. At the request of the complainant and respondent, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call vote of those in favor. Commissioner Chauvet?
Yes.
Commissioner Deshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Good. You can hang up now. Oh, no, Mr. Good? Mr. Good, you have another matter on. So hang in there.
I have another what?
There's another matter on here from 2020. It's I'll call in a minute, okay? Calling now FIC 2020-0213, Ian Wright versus Carlton Giles, Chairperson, State of Connecticut, Board of Pardons and Paroles et al. Are you there, Mr. Wright? Mr. Wright?
Mr. Chairman,
is there anyone there?
Mr. Chairman, Colleen Murphy here again, and Mr. Wright indicated that he did not wish to participate.
Okay, thank you. Anyone there, State of Connecticut?
Assistant Attorney General Leland Moore. I'm here for the respondent. I urge adoption of the hearing examiner's report. I will note that my client doesn't necessarily agree with paragraph 14. However, we urge adoption.
Thank you. All right. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Your second.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Your discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Mr. Chauvet?
Yes.
Mr. Kuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Wright. Thank you, Attorney Moore. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0239, Jose Perez versus Roland Cook, Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Corrections. Is Jose Perez there, please?
Mr. Chairman, Colleen Murphy again. On this one, Mr. Perez is in a different institution. We just learned of this this morning. He is also in a different institution, and our understanding from the institution is that we cannot put him on the call today, so I would recommend marking this one off.
Mark that off then.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, it's Matthew Reed. I have a fresh number for Mr. Velasco. You called him as the first case, and you're about to call him for the next case, so if I could just make this call quick.
Sure.
I perhaps can have him on the line momentarily.
Sure.
Good afternoon, it's Matthew Reed, Freedom of Information Commission calling. Do you have Victor Velasco for a hearing?
Hi, good afternoon. This is Councilor McCray on the line from Garner CI.
Hi, it's Matthew Reed from the Freedom of Information Commission calling. Do you have Victor Velasco on the line?
Give me one moment. I just have to transfer okay. the phone call.
Okay, over. Thank you.
You're
thank
welcome.
You very much.
This is Velasco.
Hey, Mr. Velasco, it's Matt Reed, the Freedom of Information Commission. We are, have started our commission meeting, and you have three matters on the agenda today, so if you're ready to go, the chairman will call your cases soon.
Okay, so calling now FIC 2020-0252, Victor Velasco versus Roland Cook. State of Connecticut Department of Correction at Al. Chair, Mr. Velasco.
How are you?
Yes, Mr. Velasco, would you like us to mark this ready?
I would ask for a continuance, but I'm to be honest with you, I'm not really sure. When you say mark this ready, I'm not really sure what that means.
So if you wish to argue on this one today?
No, I can't. I can't because I don't have my property. I don't have my paperwork.
Okay, you have three matters on today. Would you like us to mark them all over so that you can prepare?
Yes, please.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I know it's been a headache with these continuances, so I apologize. But I have no control over this.
So, Elaine, can we mark all those matters off and reschedule them for the next hearing date?
Yes, we can. Two of the three items, Mr. Velasco did file a brief, and in case he's wondering whether we received those, we do have a brief in two of his matters.
Only in two?
Yes.
I sent briefs for three.
I have in my possession one for 2020-0026 and one for 2020-0252. Not for the third, 0278.
I gave those to the counselor. I have to see what happened with that because I can't mail those out myself. Those have to be mailed out by the counselor. So maybe, maybe it got delayed. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Okay. Well,
but they should have all went out at the same time. They should be in Manila envelopes.
This is all we have at the present time, so we'll be on the lookout for those for next time.
Okay. All right.
Great. So, Mr. Velasco, we're going to mark all three of those matters off: 0026, 0252, and 0278.
Was he on the previous one, or was he just called without him being present? And I don't have any contact information for him.
Yes, he was on Colleen Murphy here. Yes,
I'm sorry.
He was. This second one is a withdrawal at hearing, dismissal.
Okay. I'd entertain a motion.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report. Commissioner Streeter.
For a second.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
The motion has been made, seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Mr. Chabet?
Yes.
Mr. Fusecki?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw?
Yes.
Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next. Packet number FIC 2020-0133, Joseph R. Sastre, this is Brandon Robertson, Town Manager, Town of Avon, et al. Here, Mr. Sastre.
Yeah, I'm here.
Like this marked ready?
Yes, please.
All right, it'll be marked ready. Anyone there for the Town of Avon?
Yes, Michael Harrington here for the Town of Avon.
Thank you. Next is FIC 2020-0209, Dane Walters versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Social Services, et al. Is there anyone there on that matter?
Diane Walters,
Attorney
General.
And Assistant Attorney General, Tanya United,
the Department.
Diane Walters there?
I am.
Would you like to be heard, ma'am?
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll mark that ready. Sorry, I didn't hear who was there for the State of Connecticut.
Assistant Attorney General, Tanya DiMattia, for the Department.
Next is docket number FIC 2021-0030, Michael Bauer versus the Attorney, Office of the City Attorney, City of Bridgeport, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, Wendy Estella with Aton Law Partners.
Wendy, are you here? Wendy Estella, you're here for Mr. Bauer?
Yes.
Michael Bauer is on the line as well.
Anyone here for the City of Bridgeport?
Yes, Dean Scalo here, Office of the City Attorney of Bridgeport, here for the respondent.
Attorney Scalo. Last is FIC 2021-0128, Jacqueline Diaz versus Gerald Narowski, Chief Police Department, City of Derby. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, John Marini representing City of Derby.
Yes, this is council related. That was inmate good kicked off.
So it's John Delaney. Attorney John Delaney. This is,
hello.
This is John Marini representing City of Derby.
No, this is council related.
Hang on a second. Is there anyone there for Jacqueline Diaz, please? Is there an attorney there for Jacqueline Diaz?
Mr. Chairman, this is Colleen Murphy. No, we had no way of reaching Ms. Diaz, and this is a dismissal for failure to prosecute. I think the other gentleman is on for the prior case.
I don't interrupt. I want to get inmate Good back on the phone here.
We just went through his matter. We dismissed it.
So he doesn't need to be on the phone anymore?
Colleen, should we bring him back?
I think it might be wise to just bring him back because I'm guessing he didn't object to the report, but let's see if he got kicked out.
Hold on one second.
Thank you. All right, just so I'm clear, who is here on the Jacqueline Diaz matter? There's another attorney there.
Hello? Yes, John Marini representing City of Derby.
Marini, okay. Do you have any, Mr. Good, just please wait. We'll call your case in a minute.
Okay.
Do you have any objection to us acting on this, or would you like to be heard?
Attorney Marini, just urging the adoption of the finding.
Thank you. I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report in the Diaz case.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'm going to take a roll call of those in favor. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll do a roll call of those in favor. Mr. Cervé?
Yes.
Mr. Duzeschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw?
Yes.
Mr. Speeder?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you,
counsel. Okay. So now we'll turn back to Jason Good. We've acted on this, Colleen, so what would you suggest we do?
Why don't
FIC 2020-0335, Jason Good versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut Department of Correction.
So, Colleen Murphy. So I would just recommend that
Colleen.
Colleen's on mute.
Sorry about that. I would just recommend that we inquire of Mr. Good whether he would like us to reopen it. It was a dismissal that he had withdrawn at hearing. If he is comfortable with that, then I don't think there's any need to move to reopen it. But if he wanted to speak on it, then I would recommend that we reopen it and allow him the opportunity to do so.
Hello? Mr. Good, we acted on this matter, which is 2020-0335, Jason Good versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut Department of Correction. We acted on that because you withdrew it, but we dismissed it based on your withdrawal. Would you like us to reopen it?
I'm trying to figure out what the matter is about, since it was so long ago. And you dated legal work, so what's this matter about? Can you tell me real quick?
It's Colleen Murphy. If you can hold on one moment, I'm just ask the hearing officer to take a quick look at the file to see.
I know, though, Mr. Good, you stated at the hearing, the complaint stated that he wished to withdraw his complaint in this case. The one that you withdrew.
What date was that? I don't even recall the matter. Subject.
September 24th, 2021, not too long ago, you appeared remotely, and you asked the hearing officer, Kathleen Ross, if you could withdraw your matter.
Yeah, you can withdraw it. You can sustain it.
Okay. All right. No need to continue to look that up, Colleen. We've acted on it. We dismissed that one. That was based on your request to withdraw it. Do you remember that?
Well, I still don't know what the subject matter is about, so it can't be that important. So
how many have you withdrawn, sir?
Multiple.
Okay.
I mean, this is what happened. Whoever responded comes with the documents, they're not signing a paper or form for withdrawal and stuff like that. So, and then it's out of memory. So, you can sustain it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Good.
Yeah.
All right.
Scott.
We'll move on to. Center. We never got a hold of Mr. Perez. Mark that off. So the first matter marked ready, I believe, is Joseph R. Sastre versus Brandon Robertson, town manager, town of Avon. That is docket number FIC 2020-0133. Are you there, Mr. Sastre?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. And are you there, Attorney Harrington?
I am.
Okay. So, Attorney Harrington, do you wish to begin?
I do. Thank you. So this case is about a pretty novel fact pattern. It involves, and I don't think there's any dispute on the facts that the hearing officer found, that an individual who had private notes came to express some concerns to the town manager regarding the former police chief. At that time, he didn't present his notes. He simply shared his concerns orally. The town manager then sought out legal counsel, and that was me. And I asked whether, in listening to the details, and I was out of state at the time, whether there was anything the individual could give to me so that I could provide legal advice to the town about how to proceed on the matter. The individual did. The individual only gave those notes to me via the town manager, understanding that he was giving them exclusively to town council for the purposes of legal advice. The copy of that individual's notes were then returned to them. You know, and so that's the fact pattern. And so in this particular case, we believe first, because these were personal notes that were not retained by the town or used by the town for town purposes, but exclusively by town council, they were not a public record. But to the extent they were, it was my request as part of my investigation to assist the town in figuring out what to do that I believe they would be privileged, very similar to the investigation notes that were conducted in SHU. So we would disagree with the hearing officer's order that these notes, these personal notes of this individual, now be publicly disclosed. The case that the hearing officer relied on dealt with a search warrant, and certainly in the case of litigation, there's opportunities for protective orders, but with FOIA, there would not be. And so these personal notes could quickly become widely publicized when this individual only provided those notes with the understanding that they were being given to counsel and that they were being returned to him. For those reasons, we believe that the hearing officer's direction regarding requiring disclosure is not appropriate and should be reversed.
Thank you. Mr. Sastre?
Yes, thank you. First, I'd like to thank the commission and the hearing officer for the opportunity. But what I would like to point out is that I believe that under the Act, it is enough that Mr. Robertson received the information. And my feeling is that if Attorney Harrington wanted to retrieve these documents in a confidential basis, he should have retrieved them himself instead of using Mr. Robertson to do it. Attorney Harrington also suggests a few things that I strongly disagree with. First is that there was any finding that the author's intent was to give it to him and for legal advice. I don't find any factual or evidentiary basis in the hearing officer's report to suggest that she had any way of making such a determination. And in fact, I don't think that she does make one. There was an in-camera review of the materials that were created, but what the hearing officer leaves out of her report is all of the information about the Avon Police Department lacking a standing internal affairs department, meaning that this high-ranking police officer had nowhere to complain about her police chief except to the police chief's boss. And Avon, peculiarly, if the chief feels that there needs to be an internal affairs department mustered, he musters one upon receiving a complaint. Obviously, in this case, that complaint would have been coming from his subordinate to him about him. So I think that it's not much of a leap to assume that this high-ranking police officer brought his or her observations to the town manager, not to seek legal advice, but rather to report the chief's activity. Further, the hearing officer seems to conclude that this high-ranking police officer didn't bother to bring her her report or photographs to the meeting with Mr. Robertson, even though that her investigation was something like a year and a half in the making at that point, and does not mention anywhere in the in-camera review as there being evidence that those notes weren't brought to Mr. Robertson at the time of the initial meeting, or that the author intended them to be used for seeking legal advice and not simply to hold the chief accountable. I think that these are arbitrary and somewhat charitable findings by the hearing officer, but I disagree strongly that any of these facts are not in dispute. Rather, I think what I'm seeing here is that a complainant who is in no position to state the facts of, say, what went on in one of these conversations because he wasn't there, is at a loss to disprove the respondent who will rather just be taken at his word for whatever it is that he has to say. But these are self-serving, unverifiable statements. Obviously, Mr. Robertson has a reason to state that he didn't see the materials until Mr. Harrington asked him to go get them, but that's not subject to verification. However, I hear time and again that the commission errs on the side of disclosure, so it seems to me that the respondent should be the one with the burden to prove that that, in fact, was the fact pattern, to the extent that it even matters. But I don't think that that these findings of fact should have been stated as findings of fact. They should perhaps be stated as respondent insists or maintains X, Y, Z, rather than just finding in their favor for lack of the complainant being able to prove otherwise. If the respondent's not going to be subject to any really meaningful cross-examination or conjecture. The author of these reports has remained anonymous throughout the proceedings, so obviously they can't be brought to the proceedings by the respondent. Perhaps they can by the hearing officer, perhaps on their own motion, similar to how they would seek an in-camera review. But although the hearing officer did conduct an in-camera review, she doesn't mention any factual basis found therein for any of these findings of fact that she just seems to have essentially given away to the respondent, making this a seemingly closer case than it really is. It's not a close case. It seems to me that what really happened here was that a subordinate police officer reported some sort of behavior to the town manager and in all likelihood produced and left written records of those observations with the town manager. But again, it's enough that he received them. If what was intended to happen was for Mr. Harrington to receive these confidentially, he should have just reached out to this police officer directly. So I do urge the commission to adopt the hearing officer's report, but I do take issue with a number of the factual findings for the reasons that I've stated. Thank you.
May I respond?
Sure.
So first off, I want the record to be clear. The hearing officer did not identify the individual in the way Mr. Sastry has characterized. Rather, the hearing officer simply identified the individual as a managerial employee. And I take issue with his suspicions or speculations about who provided this information. But if the commission looks at findings 11, 12, and 13, the hearing officer very clearly laid out the fact pattern, and she accepted as true Mr. Robertson's sworn testimony that no notes were offered. It was after he had consulted me that I asked for notes, and that he made the request of the individual with the clear disclosure that the notes were being given to counsel, who then he did, and then he returned the notes to this individual. That's all laid out in paragraph 13. And this is the suggestion that the result would be different if I had contacted the individual separately as opposed to asking the town manager to do so, I think is creating form over substance. This individual came. It's very clear the individual did not publicize their notes. They considered them personal notes, and they were shared only at the request of counsel. And so I think there's a very important concern for the commission to consider in light of the Me Too movement and the other sensitivities around employers trying to be sensitive to possible harassment issues and other workplace concerns, and those individuals being forced to disclose their identity when they may choose not to. And for that reason, I believe this really raises a very important public concern issue for the commission. Thank you.
Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
I do, Mr. Chairman. This is Victoria Shea.
Yes.
I see this as less a question of the privilege because these notes seems undisputedly were created before counsel was engaged and before there was a request by the town for legal advice. But because the employee who made the log is a managerial employee and the finding in paragraph 9 is that they are public records, it seems like that, to me, that's what's positive. It's not whether they were handed to counsel subsequent to being created. But it seems like they were logged, created by a managerial employee about matters pertaining to the employment. So I guess I'd like the hearing officer to address that issue.
Sure. This is Attorney Harmon. I was the hearing officer. I would note just first, because before I get to that, there's this kind of, the only exemption claimed in this case was the attorney-client privilege. And I know that we see traces of a privacy exemption in the respondent's post-hearing brief, but I specifically asked the respondents at the hearing if they were raising any other exemption other than the attorney-client privilege, and they said that they were not. So I just want that to be clear. The argument that the log is not a public record also was not raised at the hearing. And I do think, Commissioner Shebe, that these notes created by a manager given to the town manager would fit the definition in 1-200 subsection 5. So public records or files means any recorded data or information relating to the conduct of the public's business prepared, owned, used, received, or retained by a public agency. So I think that the records fit the definition of a public record. I would also note for the commission that this log that is in camera is the only record in the respondent's possession that in any way describes or documents the incidents that led to the termination or sudden departure, however you want to categorize it, of a chief of police, which is pretty unusual. Usually there's some record about why someone at that level in law enforcement suddenly is asked or decides to leave. This is all we have, is this employee's log. And I don't think it matters, we have a pre-existing document. You know, we have a document that was created, and you'll see that in my report, in paragraph 12, we see this log details incidents of concern to this manager from June 20th, 2018 through October 25th, 2019. So it's a long, detailed log that takes us through 1 year, 4 months, and 5 days. The meeting between the manager who created the log and the town manager happens in November of 2019. And, you know, I did have the town manager's testimony that the employee did not bring the log to the meeting. I have no reason to doubt that testimony, and I think it really is irrelevant because we have this pre-existing document, a document that was created by a manager without eyes towards receiving or getting legal advice. And so, you know, we have this case that I think is very helpful, the Kasuna Basadi case. And I understand that Attorney Harrington has raised issues with the case because it concerns a criminal matter, but the analysis of that case really focuses on how to handle the claim of attorney-client privilege with regard to pre-existing documents. That is, documents that are created without the intent of providing them to counsel or for the purpose of seeking legal advice. And that case, the Kasuna Basadi case, which is a very recent case from 2020, written by Justice Diaria, it takes us through three ways that documents can be deemed pre-existing documents or documents in general. How can they become attorney-client privilege? And I go through those three ways in paragraph 26, 27, and 28. I would also note that the Kasuna Basadi Court emphasizes that when a client invokes the attorney-client privilege with respect to documents, that privilege has to be established for each document separately considered, and it must be narrowly applied and strictly construed. In this case, we see that there's this log that's created prior to that manager going to see another manager to talk about these concerns. And I do think that he goes to talk about concerns about incidents that he's observed regarding the chief of police. The town manager then goes to seek legal advice. And so clearly we have a pre-existing document. There's no evidence in the record here that would support this pre-existing document somehow being transformed into an attorney-client privilege. And the Kasuda Basadi Court cites to another case called Angst versus Mack Trucks for this proposition that a plaintiff's handwritten notes made for personal use and not for purposes of securing an attorney would not fall within the privilege. But a typed compilation and summary created for the lawyer would fall within the privilege. So here, basically, what we have is one manager giving another manager her pre-existing notes detailing concerning incidents with the chief of police. And that log, as it was originally created without eyes towards legal advice, is simply funneled to an attorney. Passing over a document to an attorney does not transform that document into an attorney-client privilege. So, following the carefully set forth case law in Kasuda Basadi, I don't think we have an attorney-client privilege in this case.
May I respond?
Sure.
So the issue here, unlike in the case the commission is relying on, is if I had spoken to the individual and asked them what are their concerns, and they had shared it. And as the Commissioner Chabet pointed out, if this is a managerial employee, then they are the town. And that would be the town speaking to town's council. I don't think, I would hope, in light of Shoup, this commission would hold that that communication was privileged and any notes I prepared. If the individual simply said, you know, Mike, rather than go through it all and read from my notes, let me just give you the notes, that is form over substance. It is very clear that this context is important. And the commission, in its draft decision, is ignoring the context that these notes were only made present at the request of counsel. That is an important distinction, because otherwise, to hold that any notes that any manager has in any public agency suddenly are public documents is ignoring. And I didn't raise it as an exemption because it's fundamental. Throughout this proceeding, these notes have always been identified, at least by the respondent, as private personal notes. And as private personal notes, we believe, and especially after having done the research, that they are not public documents. And I cite a number of cases from numbers of jurisdictions identifying the various capacities that personal notes have not been recognized as public documents. And again, I think to compel someone to come out in the public, and I only say that in light of this commission's concern about protecting privacy and anonymity of requesters, but to then take the step that someone who raises a concern, and if they're in a managerial employee, any notes that they might have kept personal suddenly are forced into the public is a dramatic holding. And that, I think, is the public concern that's raised in this case. Thank you.
So this is Attorney Harmon. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I would just say that, you know, when it comes to a manager's notes concerning something that's going on in the town, this commission does sometimes have to consider whether those kinds of notes are exempt from disclosure because their disclosure would constitute an invasion of personal privacy. That exemption was not raised in this case. A claim that these notes were exempt pursuant to 1-210b2 would entail an analysis under the Perkins test. that test would say, in order to be exempt, that there's no legitimate public interest in those notes and that disclosure would be highly offensive to a reasonable person. Of course, the alleged inappropriate conduct of a police chief, which leads to termination or sudden departure, however you want to categorize this, is certainly a matter of public concern, and I suspect that's why I didn't get a personal privacy claim raised in this case, because they couldn't sustain the burden. So to come here after the hearing and to claim that, you know, disclosure would constitute invasion of personal privacy, I think is a red herring. That exception would not take these notes out of disclosure, and I do think it matters. You know, if a pre-existing document is not created for the purpose of seeking legal advice, we have a test set forth by our Supreme Court about how those documents become privileged. This log does not meet that test.
Thank you.
This is Mr. Sastry. Can I please respond as well?
Sure.
I didn't hear an answer. May I respond?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I guess what I'd like to say is that Attorney Harmon is suggesting that it's irrelevant whether these notes came to Mr. Robertson at the initial meeting, but she's also indicated that there's no evidence that they did. But what I'm trying to say is there's also no evidence that they did not come to the initial meeting, and the implication is that in all likelihood, if any reasonable person were to have made such a log and then brought them and then meant to go and complain to the town manager, they in all likelihood would have come to the town manager's office armed with those notes, especially a ranking or managerial police employee. Also coupled with the fact that there is no internal affairs department, there is no way for this police employee to make this complaint anonymously. So everything that happened behind closed doors, as irregular as it all sounds, Attorney Harmon will just say, oh, well, I'll just take Town Manager Robertson's word for it, that this person showed up without the notes. They showed up without the photographs. I never even asked if they had notes or photographs. That just doesn't seem in any way likely. I think that to draw a finding of fact along those lines, there'd have to be actual evidence and not just a self-serving statement in favor of that finding. If Attorney Harmon found that those notes came to this initial meeting, were presented to Mr. Robertson for the purpose of recording the police chief for some wrongdoing, we wouldn't be having this conversation about an attorney client privilege at all. That's why it's important. And if these sort of, you know, tie goes to the respondent, is to happen all the time, the commission is never going to be able to honor their stated purpose of erring on the side of disclosure. It should be up to Mr. Robertson to show that those notes really didn't come to him at the time that any reasonable person would expect that they did.
Okay, and this is Attorney Harmon, and I do take issue with Attorney Sastry saying that there was no evidence. Mr. Robertson testified that in that November 2019 meeting, the employee did not bring the log. I mean, I have no reason to doubt Mr. Robertson's testimony. And the fact that the employee who created the log is also a public official, a manager, I don't know why the fact becomes so important. These documents could be FOI'd from that employee directly. So I have no reason to doubt Mr. Robertson's testimony, and I actually don't think it's critical to the outcome in this case. And there is evidence to support that. It's testimonial evidence.
Okay.
My response to that would simply be that I've already characterized it as...
Excuse me. Do any of the other commissioners have any questions?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
I just want to... I think it sort of would have a chilling effect on any public employee to try and document wrongdoing if just by the fact they are recording something about another public official that note suddenly would become a public document. I understand that, you know, there's different issues regarding whether or not it's a attorney-client privilege or not, but if somebody is documenting wrongdoing and bringing that forward to whoever the human resources person is, that suddenly that document could be considered a public document, ergo, through the Freedom of Information Act, obtained by the subject of such, you know, for lack of a better word, investigation or to preempt. I think that just because it's a manager making documentation, what if it was a manager making a documentation on the town manager and didn't bring it to the town manager, but another, I think that, you know, we're creating a slippery slope here, whether or not, I think the hearing officer's point is probably there are other mechanisms, but to just blindly say that a document that's, you know, created with its for personal use or whatever to document wrongdoing is suddenly a public document under the Freedom of Information Act is will have a chilling effect on people, you know, trying to report wrongdoing in government.
Attorney Harmon, do you wish to address that?
Well, if I had some testimony that the employee felt that the disclosure would somehow, you know, was it either a preliminary draft or it was could constitute an invasion of privacy. But I do think that this document became part of the process by which a very big decision was made, which is the chief of police was let go almost immediately after this meeting with the employee, this managerial employee and the town manager. The concern from my perspective, and I hope from the commission's perspective, is that all of this happened without any documentation. So we have the head of the police department relatively immediately being let go or leaving, and we have no way of understanding what happened. And we have this employee who created a log of events that concerned her, and she brings this to the town manager. I mean, I don't know how this can't be a public record. It relates to the public's business. It's the behavior of the chief. And it was used, received, or retained by a public agency. Maybe there could have been another exemption, but the only exemption that I was given was the attorney-client privilege. I don't have any doubt that this is a public record. And I think that there's a real problem here because all of the things that happened in this case, the severance agreement that was released, and the memorandum that also was released, nothing talks about why this high-ranking police official suddenly had to leave his position. And I think the public does have a legitimate interest in what happened with this police chief. And unfortunately, this log is the only log that details in any way what led to that sudden departure.
To Mr. Streeter again, if I may. I'm just glad that, you know, I work in the state of Massachusetts because, you know, we have very similar, and, you know, a high-ranking person decided to resign and before anything, you know, was released. Luckily, there were no public documents. But just because a person resigns doesn't mean suddenly, I know your zeal for seeing something that happened, but does that necessarily mean that something needs to be, there needs to be a documented trail? And if this was something that came out of it, that all of a sudden he was confronted and the chief decided to resign, and it sounds like that there's something that the Freedom of Information wants, you know, a pound of flesh with to have some sort of proof that there was some connection there. If these were just private notes, I should see the in-camera records. I don't know if any other commissioners feel the same way, and if they don't, I'll be happy just to vote no against this.
This is Commissioner Hankins, if I may.
Yes.
just a couple of comments. I mean, these things were called a personal note by the managerial employee. You know, they were given to the town manager, who gave it to the attorney, and you know, they took on a life of their own because, you know, I think it's beyond peradventure that they were used to get a the chief of police to leave. And there are a whole set of statutes in place of how you actually can terminate a chief of police. You can't, it's not like any other town employee. You know, there's a certain mechanism. So there, and I think attorney Matt Reed, who, you know, given his prior positions, can vouch for that. And so they took on a life of their own. So they weren't just like personal notes somebody, you know, stuck in their back pocket and walked around with. You know, paragraph 13, the town manager was a middleman, you know? And I think there's a problem with that too, acting as a middleman. These personal log, personal notes, or whatever you want to call them, they also were not created for any legal advice, you know. And the person that made this log, you know, they weren't seeking legal advice. They were created before any type of legal advice. And in terms of the last thing I just wanted to say, you know, the idea of personal privacy. I believe if that's an issue, personal privacy would be up to the person that wrote this log, and not up to the to anybody else to argue that point. You know, perhaps to intervene anonymously or something as a Jane or a John Doe or something. But I don't think that people can raise that as personal privacy either.
This is Mr. Sastry. May I respond to Mr. Streeter's comments?
Oh, do any of the other commissioners have anything else to say?
Mr. Chairman, this is Victoria Chabay. I want to go back to what Commissioner Streeter said. I also have not reviewed the in-camera notes, and I, like Mr. Streeter, like Commissioner Streeter, benefit from doing that.
Okay. Any other commissioners? Have anything else to say?
I have one question. This is Commissioner Fusashi.
Yes.
Is there anything in the record from the person who made these notes that indicated a request for privacy or privacy issue raised? Was this person in the in-camera records? Is there anything that would indicate that?
Attorney Harmon?
No.
Thank you. And let me just go again. The argument that was argued, as I see it, was a privilege argument, attorney-client privilege. So the decision we're making is on attorney-client privilege. That is, as I read it, what has been argued until this amended argument today.
That's correct, Commissioner. This is Attorney Harmon.
Is that correct, Attorney Harmon?
Yes, that is correct.
So,
and if I might, may I speak? If this is Attorney Harrington?
No. Excuse me.
Okay.
Any of the other commissioners have anything else to say?
Well, this is Commissioner Hankins. If there is this attorney-client privilege, if that's the narrow ground we're going on, I don't see any attorney-client privilege because the managerial town employee was not... you know, seeking legal advice. So I think it fails even on that. That's all.
I agree. I don't think that the attorney-client privilege applies. But there are two commissioners who said that they would like an opportunity to see the in-camera records. I'll just ask Colleen, how would we accommodate that? Could we continue this pattern so that all could see the in-camera records?
Yes, we could certainly do that, as we've done in a few prior cases. We'd make arrangements with the commissioners who wish to come in and review them in camera, and then we'd put the matter up for another commission meeting.
Okay. I would like to know what the other commissioners think about that. I certainly want to accommodate
the commissioners that would like to look at those in-camera records. I don't know how everyone else feels. I know Mr. Streeter and Commissioner Chavez said they would like to see those in-camera records.
How do Commissioner Fusashi, based on the legal arguments that have been made today and the documentation, I would be ready to vote. But I would never want to stand in the way of commissioners who believe that looking in the in-camera records would help them think the issue, and therefore I would never stand in that way as long as the timing allowed.
This is Commissioner Hackett. I would agree 100% with what Commissioner Fusashi just said.
And I agree as well. So we will continue this. Do we need a vote to continue this matter, Colleen, Attorney Murphy?
Yes, I think that might be a good idea, just to vote to table the matter to allow you to review the records in camera.
Okay, I would entertain a motion to table.
This is Commissioner Chavez, so moved.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Streeter, I'll second that.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of tabling this so that commissioners can review the in-camera records, please say aye when your name is called. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Fusashi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw? Mr. Shaw? Mr. Shaw? Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Is Commissioner Shaw on the line still?
I'm not able to tell.
I'll call again. Is Commissioner Shaw there? I don't know how we treat that, whether we treat it as an abstention or just, we just don't have him online, but we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 votes. I vote in favor of tabling this as well. So matters table. Great. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll be back again at a later date.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you. Okay. Moving on to docket number FIC 2020-0209, Diane Walters versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut Department of Social Services et al. Are you there, Ms. Walters?
Yes, I am, sir.
Counsel, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So this matter was withdrawn. Would you like to begin?
Yes, Your Honor. I would like to make a brief oral statement. My understanding is that, first of all, thank you, Commissioner Owen Egan, and thank you, Hearing Officer Reed, for allowing me to present my oral argument. I understand that the case is up for dismissal for failure to prosecute, and I have some comments about that. First of all, I do not have an excuse for missing the hearing, as I am accountable for my actions. But I do respectfully have a reason. As you know, I'm a 68-year-old disabled senior citizen who collects Social Security and works to supplement my income, and that my application for benefits was denied by DSS in 2020. In 2020, the state of Connecticut, for whom I work, shut down many of its operations. And as a result, my supplemental income plummeted by about 70%. My earnings at year end totaled about $6,000. Since then, my priority has been, as many Americans, to survive COVID, to put a roof over my head and food on the table. This is my first priority and takes precedence over all else. At the end of the day, I'm often exhausted by my efforts and by my accomplishments, and things fall between the cracks that are not on my priority list to survive. This is what happened with that hearing date. As I shared previously with Hearing Officer Reed, I do not believe that this venue could provide me adequate relief for the denial of food stamp assistance. As a 30-year resident of Connecticut and a taxpayer all of those years, Because knowing that DSS withheld information mandated under FOIA is hollow. The damage is done, the relief was denied, the consequences of no relief were suffered. I believe adequate relief can only be found at the federal level, where DSS will need to defend itself against allegations of age discrimination. I do note that DSS has apparently learned nothing from the scathing rebuke by Judge Bryant of the U.S. District Court back in 2012. I also note that DSS, at my expense and the expense of all Connecticut taxpayers, enjoys the counsel of two attorneys today. Management at DSS, whom I accuse of abuse of discretion, was not called by counsel in this matter. But instead, I hired a lower level staff person who handles computer searches and claims an adequate search.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mr. Streeter. I apologize to Ms. Walter.
Mr. Chairman? Yes.
I just didn't know if that, you know, what we have before us is a failure to appear, and we don't have anything on the record going into DSS, the background here. I think the question is for Ms. Walters is, do you want to reopen this case or not, I guess, or not here?
Respectfully, I have about another minute. Comments, and at that point in time,
I really don't want to hear about the comments. I just want to know about the case.
This is Owen Egan speaking.
No, that was Commissioner Streeter. So, Ms. Walters, the question that Streeter asked is relevant. Do you wish to reopen this case? Do you wish to be heard on it?
I do not believe that I can receive adequate relief, for the reason that I do not have the funds to subpoena DSS management. And the witness called by counsel can answer the questions that need to be answered.
You could take that up with the hearing officer at the time of hearing. The question I asked, that attorney, Commissioner Streeter asked, was whether you want to reopen this to have your case heard. Would you like to reopen it? That really is the issue at hand.
I'm aware of that, and my answer to that is no, as I do not believe I could receive adequate relief, and no, because I do not have the funds to subpoena the DSS management I would need to ask to become hostile witnesses.
Mr. Chairman, just Commissioner Streeter, Ms. Walter, I actually was sympathetic to, and was going to request that we remand this back to the hearing. So I was actually supporting your case, and I think what the chairman is saying is that as far as subpoenas, the hearing officer would be able to assist you. So I just wanted to make sure you aware that that was the purpose for my interruption.
Well, I appreciate that interruption and that clarification. If indeed we are speaking about the fact that I could subpoena without expending my own out-of-pocket funds, I would entertain going forward with this. That was the main reason for my withdrawal.
So you would like to go forward then?
I would like to go forward contingent upon the knowledge that I would not be expending out-of-pocket expenses I do not have to subpoena DSS management rather than the witness called by counsel.
I can't guarantee you that, but I think the hearing officer can help you with regard to witnesses come to the hearing. So if you'd like to reopen it, then I have a question for you. Why did you fail to prosecute? Did you show up at the hearing?
I did not.
And why didn't you show up?
I believe that I stated before, I have no excuse. But I had a reason, and my reason is my priorities exhaust me, and at the end of the day, I made a mistake. I'm accountable for it.
Okay, so you missed it, and it was a mistake.
I missed it completely. I don't even know if I had it on the calendar as the correct date. I have no excuse. I just have reasons why I have other priorities.
Okay, thank you. It would entertain a motion to reopen this case.
No. May I be heard on behalf of DSS before the motion's entertained?
Certainly.
This was actually, I'm sorry, this is Tanya DiMattia, Assistant Attorney General for DSS.
Yes.
This was actually the fourth time the hearing was scheduled. It was previously scheduled on March 23rd. Admittedly, the department asked for a continuance after that, but it was then rescheduled two more times to May 5th and then June 28th at the respondent's request. My recollection, I believe the record shows that she did not provide dates as requested by the hearing officer when she could be available. Moreover, there actually is no issue of public records in this case. DSS should have indicated that when it responded to her request by providing her a copy of everything in their possession that was in their file. All it has is what's in the application.
Hold on.
If I have no oral argument, neither does she.
You don't have the... Go ahead, counsel.
So I just wanted to make that clear. We don't believe it should be reopened given the failure to prosecute more than once, that there are no public records at issue. We asked her actually to sign a release form so we could show the hearing officer what exactly had been produced. She refused to do so. She's been uncooperative throughout. What she wants doesn't exist. All of that said, if she can tell us who she wants at the hearing, if this is reopened, although we start to it reopening, we can make arrangements to do have work, whoever it is we think has the answer there.
Thank you.
I would like to request that saying
on. 1 second, ma'am. Do any of the other commissioners wish to be heard? Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I object to the characterization that I've been uncooperative. I do not believe that is truthful. I also note that the motion to dismiss was disingenuous because no motion to dismiss may be filed in this particular venue with the commission, and it was denied. And I also think that the basis for that particular motion to dismiss had nothing to do with the actual issue here, which is whether or not any cross-examined individuals who actually were accountable. Has nothing to do with my personal records. So I would object on the basis of the characterization of me being uncooperative and not producing personal records that have nothing to do with the basis of my case.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, it's Colleen Murphy here. I just wanted to point out to the commission that this appears to be a records case, and were you to dismiss this matter, of course, the complainant, if she has a renewed desire in pursuing this with us or has some faith in our process, then perhaps she could refile. She could make that determination on her own if you adopt this decision as it is. I'd also be a little concerned that if we reopen, that Ms. Walters might choose not to appear again and that we will have exhausted some of the commission's resources and time and energy of our commissioners and staff on this matter. So just my two cents, if you will.
So Ms. Walters, do you understand what Attorney Murphy is saying?
Well, I definitely do. I'm a taxpayer who paid for all of them to be here, so I most definitely understand that. And I most definitely understand that the time expended to write a motion to dismiss that both counsel should have known was improper in this venue also took up taxpayer time and taxpayer dollars and my dollars as well. So I'm quite aware of that. And there was only one time that I did not appear. I had a doctor's excuse for the other time, which I do not believe I need to defend. And I believe that the department itself, the state, asked for the continuance the first time. So I think the record needs to be straight that there was one time where I did not appear. I took accountability for that. I said I have no excuse, but my reason is I'm working to put a roof over my head.
So what Attorney Murphy was saying is that if the matter is dismissed, you can refile and ask for the same records once again, start the process again. And then I think at that point, if you get to a hearing officer, you can ask the hearing officer for assistance in getting witnesses to come in to testify. And I overheard the opposing counsel say that if you need witnesses to be present, that the attorney will make sure that those witnesses are present or will do her best to make sure those witnesses are present.
Okay.
So I just wanted to be sure that you were clear on that, if the matter is dismissed based on the failure to prosecute today. All right? Okay, I entertain a motion on this.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. Well, after listening to the executive director and you know, there was a little bit of an ambivalence on behalf of the complaint, but I will move that we accept the hearing officer's report as written.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeci?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw? Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. So, ma'am, the matter has been adopted. It's been dismissed for failure to prosecute, but you are free to file again, and you are free to ask the hearing officer for assistance in getting witnesses to come. Okay?
Well, thank you, and thank you to Officer Reed, Hearing Officer Reed, for volunteering to assist me with that particular hurdle.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Ms. Walters, and thank you, Council. We'll move on. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0020, Michael Bauer versus City Attorney, Office of the City Attorney, City of Bridgeport et al. Are you there, Mr. Bauer?
I am.
Okay. And
I'm here as well. I'm his attorney. This is Wendy Estella.
Attorney Estella, thank you. Is counsel for the City of Bridgeport there?
Good afternoon. This is Dina Scalo here for the respondent.
Okay. All right. So let's see. So Attorney Scalo, would you like to begin, please?
Yes, please. Thank you so much again for your time. So just to sort of briefly summarize, I think the testimony and the request speak for themselves in this matter. Essentially, what is at issue is the requester was requesting, and it's in paragraph 3 of the proposed final decision, the current list of reassessment values issued by municipal valuation and sent to property owners within the City of Bridgeport through the tax assessor's office. So based on the testimony and understanding of what's available, essentially the requester was looking for a rough draft of the grand list that's issued by the tax assessor's office. And the respondents contend that based on the testimony provided at the hearing, it should support a finding that that list would be exempt pursuant to 1210B1 as a preliminary draft. And the reason that the respondents focused in on the fact that Mr. Bauer requested a list as opposed to fields or specific data fields, as the proposed final decision characterizes it, is because the fact that it's a list that is subject to change really directs the analysis as to whether it's exempt or not. So at the hearing, an employee from the tax assessor's office testified as to the fact, to the effect that the list that was requested can be changed, and while it does contain information that is provided in what's called notices of change or notices of reevaluation that are mailed to a specific taxpayer, the difference is really in the character of the document. The notices of change that are sent to taxpayers are static documents. They are mailed out, they're final documents, they're alerting taxpayers of a change in their valuation, whereas a list that's prepared in advance of the adoption of a final grand list can be changed and is subject to change such that it's fair to characterize it as a preliminary draft or a preliminary version of a grand list that's later adopted. And so in analyzing this, that really sort of drives the respondent's legal argument that it constitutes sort of a pre-decisional or preliminary draft. And so the complainant argues and the final decision makes a determination that there was no analysis or determination done by the respondents that there was no interest in disclosing this list to the public. The testimony at the hearing shows that's not true. The city's witness advised that in reading the request, there was a determination that was made that it wouldn't be beneficial to the public to release a list of preliminary values because it would be subject to change, and because the list reflected essentially a work in progress that upon the signing of the grand list is complete. So I think that sort of takes care of the respondent's argument. We believe that it's pretty clearly a preliminary draft or such that it would fall under the 1210B1 exemption. And while the information is available in public hearings or notices that are sent to a taxpayer, the character of the document itself is different, and that's what should drive the analysis as to whether the record is exempt or not, and we believe that it is. Notwithstanding any of that, even if the commission opts to hold most of the proposed final decision unchanged, we would take exception to order number one on page 5, which requires that the respondent shall provide a copy of the records described in paragraph 3, so that preliminary list to the requester at no charge. Based on the comments that were made by Mr. Bauer at the hearing and the amount of time that has elapsed since the original request was made, I believe in December 14th of 2020, the contents of that list, it's my understanding that Mr. Bauer isn't really interested in them anymore. The grand list has been finalized in January of 2021, so essentially the issue is kind of moot. So I would ask that the commission or the hearing officer reconsider the imposition of this order, just given the amount of time that has elapsed, the fact that the complainant may not be interested in this information anymore, given the time that has elapsed, and the fact that the grand list, which is essentially, you know, it bears repeating, sort of a final document with these valuations, has been finalized and has been available since January of this year. We would ask that the commission reconsider including that order. But I believe that's it for me. I'm glad to take any questions that anyone may have, and thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Michael Bauer.
Hi, this is Wendy Estella for the complainant. And basically, I submitted a short memo which basically supports adoption of the hearing officer's report. I'm not going to go through every detail, but we do agree with the hearing officer's analysis. Our position has been that the exception of preliminary draft was just applied overly broadly, and that our request was not only for a list, but it was broken out down into 5 specific categories of information that were contained in electronic databases that were easily provided. It was the parcel IDs, map lot number, property addresses, owner names, prior grand list value, and 2020 proposed valuation. Yes, time has passed. I'd have to consult with my client about whether or not he would still want this information, but it is quite frustrating that time has passed and, you know, the opportunity to review that information has passed. This request was put in almost a year ago. It was December of 2020, and my client has not had access to the information. So with that, I'm reserving a couple minutes in case my client would like to add anything, but our position is that we urge adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions for the parties? Okay. I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Heinfeld, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing done. I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw? Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, counsel, on both sides. Good job.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. on to report on pending appeals.
Yes, I don't have any report on pending appeals today, Mr. Chairman. I actually don't have any additional reports for you other than I just want to reference under staff reports that, as promised, we brought along to our staff, Jennifer Moore, and she's with us today. You can't see her, but she's here at the commission's offices with us, and we're very glad to have her on board. So I just wanted to acknowledge that.
Welcome. Thank you. Welcome.
She's smiling. So far, she's smiling. And after that, no legislative report, and I think that concludes it for me today.
All right.
So Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I move we adjourn.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Okay, all those in favor of adjourning, please say aye. Mr. Sine?
Aye.
Mr. Fideschi?
Aye.
Mr. Hankins?
Aye.
Mr. Shaw? Mr. Streeter?
Aye.
And Owen Egan, aye. We're adjourned. Thank you all. Great job. Have
Thank
a great
you.
Day.
You too.
Take care. Thank you. Bye.